Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President Donald Trump is expected to unveil his administration's proposal for what could be the most sweeping changes to the federal tax code in decades. The president's expected to speak about it in Indiana at roughly 3:20, and we will bring you that speech, followed by analysis as soon as it begins. But while we wait, let's take a look at politics closer to home, because last night, several key municipal elections and preliminaries took place here in Massachusetts. First, in Boston, two candidates emerged in the Boston preliminary, incumbent Mayor Marty Walsh and City Councilor Tito Jackson. That's, of course, for the Boston mayoral race. And here now with more is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, Meghna.
Okay, so first of all, before we dig into the actual numbers of the Walsh Jackson race here, I want to talk about the turnout. Only 14% of Boston voters turned out. What does that say about the race?
Yeah, it's a low number. And I guess it says a couple of things. You could argue that it bodes well for Mayor Marty Walsh, the incumbent, because for many people in Boston, things are going pretty well. There isn't a fiscal, political, or corruption crisis that might have driven more people to the polls. The economy is relatively strong, even if it's leaving quite a few people behind. We'll get into that in a bit. But these are arguably pretty good times in Boston, so there isn't that sense that would, that sense of urgency to get people out who want to shake things up. Another reason, and you'll hear this from the supporters of Tito Jackson, they're frustrated that they didn't have a chance to get a one-on-one debate with Marty Walsh and Tito Jackson. They also say that Boston did too little to promote this election in an effort to help the incumbent. Whether that's true or not is difficult to determine, but put all that together and you ended up with a pretty low voter turnout.
Yeah, that 14% of total voters. Well, of that 14%, the mayor, the incumbent, got 63% of the vote. Jackson, 29%. So what do you make of the results?
Well, clearly a good night for Marty Walsh. More than twice as many folks voted for him than Jackson. He even beat Tito Jackson in the District 7 neighborhoods that Jackson represents. Mm. But, give credit to Tito Jackson. He's a serious candidate. He becomes the first black mayoral candidate in more than 30 years since Mel King ran against Ray Flynn. He's relying on an army of volunteers, a lot less money to wage a populist campaign, and he's raising some pretty important issues that should make for a pretty lively and good debate in the coming weeks.
Okay, so what are then the key issues that we're likely to hear debate over between Walsh and Jackson?
Well, for Mayor Walsh, he said yesterday, "Judge me on my record," and he'll make a case that Boston is a city on the rise under his stewardship. He takes credit for adding jobs, more housing, fewer homeless people, a AAA bond rating, and a booming business economy. Here's a bit of what he said last night in Dorchester after the polls closed.
We have new companies like GE and Lego and Reebok coming into our city and taking our economy to the next level. We use that growth to fund more of our schools, more job training in our neighborhoods, more resources to our parks and playgrounds and libraries than they've ever seen before in this city's history.
Mm. Yeah, so Meghna, it's going to be, look at my record, look what I've done, give me another 4 years. Tito Jackson has another view. If Mayor Walsh says this is a glass more than half full, Tito Jackson says this is a glass that's half empty. A booming economy that's helping some, but leaves too many people behind. We have one of the highest rate of income disparity and wealth disparity in the nation here in Boston. So he's waging very much a populist campaign on behalf of poor and working Bostonians being squeezed out of neighborhoods because of rising rents. The kinds of things that he's pushing for, a $15 minimum wage, expand affordable housing, spend more on education, and a big theme, democratize City Hall. Among the things he wants to do is abolish the Boston Planning and Development Agency, which he says is undemocratic, and make the Boston School Board an elected school board. Mm. Here's a bit of what we heard from Tito Jackson last night.
We have over 30% increase in murders, we have a huge increase in shootings. And in my administration, we will make sure that a life on Blue Hill Avenue
Come on.
Will mean the same as a life on Commonwealth Avenue.
And Anthony, if there's one thing that's for sure in this race, both of these men have very interesting backgrounds.
Yeah, they really do. I think most of a lot of Bostonians know something about the mayor already. Union guy, cancer survivor, recovering alcoholic, speaks very passionately and eloquently to the recovering community. Tito Jackson, a really interesting personal story. His birth mother was a 13-year-old girl who was sexually assaulted, and then he was adopted by Rosa and Herb Jackson, who were two Boston activists, and really grew up taking on the sort of activist energy of his families, and ended up at UNH on a very white campus where he reestablished the Black Student Union and really began kind of political advocacy there. Now he's bringing a lot of issues to the fore here in Boston.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as you mentioned a bit earlier, Anthony, Mayor Walsh and Councillor Jackson did not engage publicly in a face-to-face debate before the preliminary. I mean, there were four folks total before this preliminary, but these two were the main candidates.
Right.
Even before yesterday. They didn't engage in a face-to-face debate. We had a couple of forums back-to-back, but now that the two are the final candidates for the mayoral race, what do you expect between now and November?
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, you've got to give the advantage to the incumbent. I mean, beating an incumbent mayor in Boston is historically difficult.
Yeah, well, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, there are the numbers that are just insane over the course of 150 years, how rarely this happens. Walsh has millions in his campaign account. He's got the support of the Democratic establishment. He also remains very popular. I mean, that has to be stressed. But Jackson is bringing some important issues to the table, a great opportunity, I think, for an important citywide debate, particularly about the huge wealth disparity in the city. For example, you know, Jackson thinks it's a mistake to lure big companies like GE to Boston because they don't spread the wealth to working folks, but they do cause the rents to go up. And this is a real debate, not only in this city, but across the country, about how best to respond to growing economic disparity. So I think there will be a debate about that, about how successfully Boston is dealing with the crime issue. Overall, things are pretty good in this city, especially mm-hmm. compared to others. But as Jackson points out, not so great if you live in one of the handful of neighborhoods where the majority of shootings and killings are taking place. There's a big argument about public schools. If you think they're improving, then give Walsh credit. If you're frustrated by a stubborn achievement gap, Tito Jackson probably has something to say about that. It should be a lot of really interesting conversations.
Absolutely. We can say with confidence, hopefully, that the city will get the exact kind of political and policy debate between these two that it deserves.
Absolutely.
Between now and election night, WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks bringing us up to speed on last night's preliminary in the Boston mayoral campaign. Thank you so much, Anthony.
Of my pleasure, Magna.
All right. Well, let's now turn to Framingham, where voters there for the first time voted in a preliminary election for mayor because Framingham is now officially a city in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Metro West Daily reporter Jim Mahudadeen hosts the Making a City podcast, which focuses on the Framingham election. And he joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Magna. Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you. So first of all, give us a little insight into last night's results. What happened in Framingham?
The big story out of last night's preliminary was the impressive victory from a relative newcomer to politics in Framingham, Yvonne Spicer. She works at the Museum of Science in Boston. She was, for many years, a schoolteacher in Framingham. She's served on town meeting, which is an elected position in the town, but hasn't really had a major role in politics. And she stepped in for a seven-way race for mayor and managed to come out with more than half the vote, running against John Stefanini, a former state representative and former town selectman who is very well known here and had a lot of support. So I think a lot of people were surprised by her margin of victory last night.
It does sound surprising. A seven-way race, you said, and Spicer came away with, what, 54% of the vote?
Yeah, she came away with the newest totals out this morning are 5,967 votes to Stefanini's 3,184. So it was almost 2-to-1 support and 2-to-1 in many precincts almost across town. She captured the vote. So it is a long road ahead for John Stefanini if he's going to manage to pull this out on November 7th.
Huh. Now, have you had a chance to talk to folks who voted for either Spicer or Stefanini and why they were drawn to each candidate?
I spent some time at the polls yesterday asking people what was on their minds. One thing you hear a lot about in Framingham is development and the threat of overdevelopment as the land in Framingham and Metro West kind of becomes more valuable with a scarcity of developable land in the area, and people are looking to build housing and address the housing shortage around here. So there are proposals to put apartments in a lot of places in Framingham and really increase the housing stock. Some people think that's a great thing. Some people are worried about what it's going to do to traffic, what it's going to do to the population of school-aged children. And so there's a lot of focus on that and a lot of attention on what the candidates are going to do to make sure development goes in the right place. There's also been, you know, this is an election that's been about policy issues, but also about the character of the candidates, and there have been a few events that happened along the way that called into question the character of the candidates, and I think that really has been also on the minds of voters.
Okay, so you can't say that without me saying, events? What events?
So back in May, this is right after the community decided to become a city, took its passed a referendum in April to pass a new city charter. Early days of the campaign, there was this moment where Stefanini was video recorded removing some campaign materials that had been set up by an Yvonne Spicer supporter in a lobby at the library. We put in a public records request to the police department and got a copy of that videotape, and it has been viewed many, many times, and I think that really left an impression with people. Stefanini has apologized. He said that he thought that these materials had been left out in the lobby in violation of a town policy on campaigning, and, you know, had the best intentions doing it. But I think a lot of people really did have that in mind, and people I spoke to when they went to the polls yesterday and felt like that was an action that spoke to Stefanini's character.
Mm. And sorry, Jim, go ahead.
And there have also been, on the other side, questions about Yvonne Spicer's voting record. There was this kind of mysterious robocall that went out Monday evening right before, you know, 24 hours before people were going to vote, that pointed out that she has not participated in a number of local elections over the last decade. And so I think people also had questions about that, too.
Oh, interesting. Now, Jim, obviously this is the first time that Framingham voters haven't had a chance to, you know, cast any kind of ballot in a mayoral election, because the Framingham narrowly voted in April to change to city governance. So, I mean, look, I think all elections are consequential, but this one's particularly special in Framingham. So what are the biggest challenges ahead?
Well, This is a special moment for the community, and you know, in addition to electing people who they think are, you know, smart and capable, people are looking for candidates who will bridge this gap from a town meeting system to a new city structure, which has, you know, fewer people in elected positions, fewer people with more authority and political power over what happens. So they're looking for people that are cognizant of the need to make that transition smooth. And it's important to remember that when the city charter passed in April, this was not an overwhelming mandate to do this.
Right.
The community has kind of, in many ways, for a century, been debating whether it should stay a town or become a city, and the city charter only passed by 108 votes. So there's some bitterness around that, and I think a lot of the people who were pro-town and didn't want to see the city structure come in have moved into the Yvonne Spicer camp because they do see her as more of an outsider candidate who is going to make sure that things like public participation are still, you know, still thrives when the new city council takes office.
That's interesting. And thanks for reminding us, Jim, about how close the vote was about changing Framingham's municipal governance. Because to that point, I understand that turnout yesterday was, what, 27-ish percent, which is roughly the same of what it was when Framingham took a vote to change to city governance. I mean, it seems kind of surprising to me. One would think that it might be higher if it's the first time that they have a crack at taking a pick for mayor.
Yeah, so it was 27.5%, and, you know, you can kind of look at this both ways. I mean, in some ways, I think the people of Framingham should be proud that they beat the pants off of voters in Boston in yesterday's election.
You should take pride in that.
Yeah, and historically, for local elections in Framingham, the community really has struggled to break above single digits for people coming out to vote. So that even that 28% in April was a maybe 20-year high for voter participation in Framingham. So some people might look at yesterday's vote and say, you know, that's a good sign that we had 27. Perhaps you would have even more coming out for the general election when, you know, there are fewer people to think about and kind of a firmer set of decisions to make. But it is kind of an important test of this experiment the community is doing with a new city government, because one of the selling points from the people who were in favor of this is that it would increase local participation in elections. So this is kind of the first test of that to see whether, in fact, that's the case.
Well, Jim Hudadin is a reporter for Metro West Daily News. He also hosts the Making a City podcast. Jim, it was a real pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
And all elections are local. All politics are local, especially when it comes to local politics. So let's move now to Lawrence. It's a second face-off there between two mayors. And to give us insight on what exactly I'm talking about, we're joined by Keith Eddings, a reporter with the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. Keith, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So lots of folks will recognize the name William Lantigua, former mayor of Lawrence, former state rep. He's back now challenging incumbent mayor Daniel Rivera. So what happened?
The incumbent, Dan Rivera, beat Lantigua 4 years ago by just 81 votes. Lantigua tried a couple of comebacks since then, including to get his old state house seat back, and that failed. So this was actually his fourth attempt, or third attempt at a comeback, and he may have pulled this one off. He came in second last night. I wouldn't call it a tight second, but I call it an impressive second. The mayor got about 4,900 votes, and Lantigua got about 3,800, and all the other six candidates were pretty much left in the dust. So Lantigua's back, and it's going to make this a fun race to cover.
Fun because Mr. Lantigua has a controversial background, to say the least. Remind us of that.
He's got a style in government and politics that distinguished himself, I think, is the way we could put it, from what most people expect. He's very much, sort of the Latin American style, charismatic populist here in Lawrence, and it's to some extent effective because it's a very Latin city. It's 80% Latino, I think, most from the Dominican Republic. And as a matter of fact, the mayor was born in Tenares in the Dominican Republic, or close to Tenares. And after his last loss for the state house seat, he went home to Dominican Republic, disappeared basically for 2 years, and then came back. So he's got a distinct style. He had some issues with corruption in his last administration. His chief of staff went to jail. The officer he promoted to deputy police chief was accused of corruption and tried, found not guilty. He had some other issues in his administration as well with other people who were also charged but acquitted.
So, Keith, I have to say, that's a very civil way of putting it. Issues with corruption. Is that how it's described in Lawrence?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I mean, I'm seeing, as you said, the issues that he had with members of his staff, also being investigated, having been investigated for campaign finance violations.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Things like that. I was just ribbing you for being polite to Mr. Lantigua in your description.
He was actually barred. The Office of Campaign and Political Finance, which enforces campaign finance law, actually barred him from the ballot for a while because of his failure to file campaign financial disclosure forms. He's been fined a lot of money by that agency, and I think he currently has a debt of several thousand dollars. So, you know, it's all of that is, as I said, his populist style, is the corruption issues that his administration faced. He was several times called before a grand jury 4 years ago. He was never indicted, but a couple of his aides were, three were, and one went to jail. Those are the issues that the incumbent mayor, Dan Rivera, doesn't have those issues.
Yeah. So this is the word issues. Millennials throw it around a lot. I just wanted to get specific on what those issues were. Now, Keith, finally, what kind of a campaign do you expect between the two men, between Mayor Rivera and William Lantigua in the next month and a half?
Well, I'm writing a story about that for tomorrow, and I can I don't mind reading you a quote from the mayor right now.
Yeah.
The mayor said that that William Lantigua is going to be issue number one in this race, and so I think we can expect that each candidate is going to try to make the other issue number one, the other's management style. Whether the real issues facing this city, and you know, this is a very poor city, so there are issues of many, crime, opioids, state control of city spending, and also state control of the schools. Your listeners may be aware that Lawrence was the first school system in the state that was entirely seized by the state. Mm-hmm. And the state also has a fiscal overseer that controls spending at City Hall, and that's been going on for 7 or 8 years. And there's whether or not that's going to get any much attention, we'll see. Housing is a big issue. The mills are filling up in the city, but the mayor feels that the mills should be, when they reopen, they should reopen for business and industry, not for housing.
Oh, interesting.
And, of course, economic development is a big issue. We just lost PolarTech.
Wow. Yeah. So a lot at stake in this election in Lawrence. Keith Eddings, reporter with the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was great being here. Thank you very much.
It's great to have you. So that was a terrific roundup of several important municipal elections or races voting that happened yesterday. We are still waiting for President Donald Trump in Indiana to speak about his new tax plan for the federal tax code. We're going to take a quick break and come back, and we will turn to the president as soon as he begins speaking. So stick with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.